Hi, you are listening to Asian Skycast, the show that brings you the most updated aviation industry insight.
Good evening and welcome to another Asian Sky Media, Asian Skycast. My name is Alud Davis. I'm the Media and Communications Director here at Asian Sky Group and Asian Sky Media. Delighted, absolutely delighted today to be joined by Kirsten Bartel. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing well, Alud. So nice to speak with you. So
you're in the DC area at the moment, is that right?
I am. We relocated a couple of years ago from 20 plus years in the Bay Area. So it's been a change before COVID. So COVID impacted us meeting people, but it's been great. I'm amazed at how dynamic DC is, how much is going on in terms of financing and generally and all broad aviation, as well as a very robust emerging technology community around aerospace and defense. I mean, there's just a lot going on. So it's been a exciting and pleasant surprise.
I can imagine. And I think the NBAA is based in the DC area as well. And one of your sort of supplemental roles that you do is that you're a member of the advisory council for the NBAA as well.
It's true. And it's been nice being closer to Ed Bolin and his team. They're such an exceptional group, and what they and Gamma and everyone does for the industry is exceptional. So it's nice to be more local, and I can be more supportive of their efforts, especially as we work on helping get Congress and the DOE some more funding for the emerging technologies in our sector.
Absolutely. And I think most people, and certainly myself as well, most associate you with Air Finance, which you sort of co-founded as well, or founded or co-founded quite a while ago. But prior to that, you co-founded ExoJet as well, didn't you?
I did way, way back. That was my first foray into aviation. I was one of the original founders and board members, and then eventually would join as CFO. And I admit, so that was now more than 20 years ago. I didn't know a piston from a turbine back then. And now I love getting intimate in how the aircraft works and combustion and all the new technology. So it's been a long career, but exciting. So.
Absolutely. Can you sort of remember back and sort of try and remember how Air Finance originally came about, the idea behind it?
Sure. Well, I was lucky. Tom Lowe and I both had kind of individual ideas. I had first got involved with export credit financing when I was at ExoJet. So we were looking as an earlier stage, part 135, part 145, we're looking for financing assistance. And we couldn't find traditional financiers because, as we all know, the business jet industry, the financiers are predominantly in high net worth groups of banks. They don't take the same commercial asset approach that the commercial airline guys do. So we spent a lot of our time pitching to the large commercial lessors, and they were like, business jets. And one of the few groups that would help us with our aircraft purchases was EDC, so Export Development Canada, and Veera Nioshi and his team up there. So at that time, we got financing from that organization. When I would later move into Hawker Beechcraft, that would begin a long partnership with the transportation group at the U.S. Export Import Bank. So they had predominantly been supporting Boeing aircraft for their history, but they recognized the growth and the need in the general aviation sector, and they were trying to figure out how to assist it. Tom Lowe had put together a very creative financing with Kathy Flanagan and Bob Morin at XM just after the financial crisis to help fund Textron, and certainly Textron Financial and their financing of jets. And we were working on a similar thing at Hawker Beechcraft as well for putting together financing. So what it showed is that if you looked at the history back then, there was very little financing available outside of the U.S. If you had all of your money in a Swiss bank account, you know, Societe Generale or someone would give you financing. But if you were a corporation in India or China or Africa or even Western Europe and in a good credit, it was almost impossible for you to find financing. And it was even more impossible if you planned to manage the aircraft on your own and, let's say, run your own Part 91 or Part 135 provider. So Tom and I founded the group. It was a great collaboration, private-public partnership between XM Bank. Bob Morin and Kathy Flanagan were so instrumental. I think most of the people in the industry who finance jets have met them. And today, David Fiore runs the group, and he is pivotal and leans in. And they want to be here to help both the business jet industry as well as the emerging industries around it. So they've done simulators. They've done parts. We've done working capital lines since then. And I think today you're going to see a transition of working both on, they recently announced a new domestic financing support so that they'll be able to help some companies focus on domestic sales that also have international and are export ready. And then we're expanding, and we've been doing a lot with both the Development Finance Corp, UKEF, and now we're looking at the Department of Energy, and we're seeing them lean into aircraft manufacturing as it relates to greening of aerospace. So as we talk about electric aerospace and hydrogen, I think that's where the trends are going. So Air Finance is actively working with the DOE to figure out how we can partner and be the guaranteed lender for their long-term loans to help build out manufacturing facilities for green aerospace. So we did a lot of innovative things early on, and we continue each year to look for new ways we can expand and be supportive of the industry.
Because there is actually a venture capital arm of Air Finance as well, which people might not be too familiar with. And presumably that's sort of what you're alluding to at the moment with sort of getting involved with new technologies.
It is and it isn't. I think the venture capital arm is not our core business. It's something we do on the side with interesting technology and allows us to kind of stay up to date. It's really a small size checks. But what I was actually alluding to is, no, the Department of Energy and working with new companies like Joby or Beta or Eviation or MagniX or EPS and building out their manufacturing facilities as they go into the new world of green aerospace, universal hydrogen. It's those type of fundings that can come from guaranteed loans from the Department of Energy. So it's truly just an extension of our business at Air Finance as to going into these government guaranteed loans. We will be the lender of record with our partnership, just like we do with EXIM. But now instead of financing, let's say a G700 going to Vietnam, or we will now be working with the Department of Energy to finance and be the lender of record for the loans building these factories. So it's an exciting time.
Was that sort of pivot, if I can get away with calling it a pivot, based on market conditions outside of the U.S.?
I wouldn't say it's a pivot. I mean, there's still a lot of large companies that are doing extremely well post-COVID. We have, as you know, as well as we do, we've seen an acceleration in people wanting to fly private, people saying, you know, people who normally have the resources to fly private, but they said, you know, commercial first class is fine with me. And now post-COVID or in COVID, they're saying, I don't want to risk that. I don't want to risk my people. So we have seen the aircraft business is quite good. And I think the good news is, you know, 10 years later into our business, we have a very close partnership with the OEMs. They understand exactly the type of customers that are a good fit for Air Finance now. So we've gotten, earlier in our years, it was like, well, could you do this? Could you do this? And now later on, you know, especially as we work with Gulfstream or the other OEMs, they know exactly the type of customers that we work with, Leonardo, same sort of thing. And we bring those. So we don't waste a lot of time as well. And remember, EXIM wants to be there supportive, but they want to be there augmenting the commercial bank. So if there is always someone who will provide financing from the commercial side at reasonable rates, that is, EXIM and Air Finance are happy to let that be supportive. But if you can't find financing at reasonable rates and you're outside the U.S., we can be supportive of that. And it'll be interesting in the future whether with this new domestic financing rule, if fleet operators in the U.S. are having difficulty getting financing, whether we can be supportive there.
Absolutely. And so doing my own slight pivot in this case, leads us quite nicely onto sort of new technologies and your new company, New Vista. How did you set that company up? What was the main reasons behind it?
I think it was a way to institutionalize. Air Finance and AF Capital have very core businesses of being a lender for the industry, where it needed kind of its own vehicle. So we've been thinking about how to do that and how to leverage that, but also keep it separate because you don't want to cross lines. So we had been looking at the SPAC market and seeing that kind of come up and thought it was a great opportunity to provide financing for this emerging industry, especially as this, you know, when you have hardware, software enabled hardware, which all of our VTOLs are, the drones are, almost anything, look at the space industry. So those are new industries and they need significant resources, unlike a traditional software company, right? So the SPAC market or the public markets are a great opportunity to do that. So we started looking at that, and through a friend in the industry that I've known for a long time, new Dennis Muhlenberg, was also very active in that and interested in helping the sector. So we were able to team up early, and we developed an idea for New Vista Capital and the investment platform. Our first vehicle was a SPAC. but we always knew long term we'd want it to be more of a broad investment vehicle, potentially stage agnostic, probably in the end doing more, a little bit more venture capital, but we'll always be stage agnostic, but totally focused on emerging technologies in aerospace and defense. You know, I always hark back to, I was at Goldman when NetSeek went public and then was lucky enough to move to California and Silicon Valley shortly after that. So we're talking 97. And if I was joking, if I had known, you know, now, if I knew then what I knew now, I would have, you know, possibly made different careers as much as I love the aerospace industry. But as you look at what's happening in space and in aerospace, it became obvious to me that we were on the precipice of another 20-year huge transformation in the industry. Our aircraft are not going to look like they have over the last 80 years. You know, what's happening in low Earth orbit and space is going to revolutionize how we communicate. And what occurs and what we see on the Earth is we're seeing with the war in Ukraine. So watching, kind of knowing that technology and knowing we're at the beginning of this long cycle, this long growth cycle in evolution, it was an exciting opportunity, a way to get in and way to try to support these companies, both from a capital sector, but also from a people sector. One of the other things that my co-founders at NuVista, Dennis and then Travis Nelson, did is we put together a very thoughtful team. One that is composed of engineers and longtime, aerospace industry technologists, as well as business operators from many different aspects, whether Gur Kimchi, who is at Amazon and Microsoft, he built Amazon Prime. He's a fascinating technologist. You know, Paul Aramenko, who's doing universal hydrogen, Dr. John Tracy, who is CTO. We've got Howard Lance from Axar. So we really said, Marion Blakey from the FAA, we really said, if you're an early stage company in any of these sectors, who are some of the people that you would want access to? And let's have them on our team. And what we've been so pleasantly surprised at is the engagement. You know, these are not just people who we list on our website. These are people who join our daily meetings, are actively involved, and they're excited. They are genuinely excited about the next 20 years of what's going to occur and the change that's going to happen in our industry.
Do you think there's a danger, or at least a slight danger, that the AAM sector is being overhyped?
People need to have a realistic view of how rapidly it's going to evolve. So, and by this, I mean, we're not going to be flying on these things. They're not going to be flying all over our skies in the next 2 to 3 years, but in the next 7 to 10, they will be. You know, we have to get through the difficult and early hurdles of FAA certification. It is achievable. We know how to do that. Everyone is leaning in. We're excited. We're careful to make sure, certainly in the, you know, you've got kind of three disciples. So you've got the CAAC in Asia doing something over there. You've got EASA, who's taking a slightly different approach. You've got the FAA. So we need to make sure these aircraft are safe, but the technology is there, the capabilities. It's not we often talk about battery technology. It's like, oh, I've got to invent a new sulfur form of battery, which we're hoping will, but that will take time. These are things that are possible today. We just have to make sure how you integrate them, how you build it, and then how you get it certified to make sure it's safe and operate it. The operating side will also take time to ramp up. People want these to be safe. So it's just having the appropriate expectations. So I am incredibly bullish on the industry. I also think it's going to take time. And I equate it to, you know, having been in kind of the internet proliferation back in the early 2000s. I always joke, we had WebVan, we had Cosmo.com. These things were too early for a time. We didn't have the processing power to deliver groceries, everyone from their handheld back in 2000. We didn't have the middleware. But if you're a student of technology and you understand how that middleware within the internet was built out to create processing power, to create backward linkage, the APIs between all the systems, it takes time. And we have to understand that the same thing will occur in the advanced air mobility sector. It will take time to build that, what I always call the digital infrastructure, never mind the physical infrastructure. And we have to be patient and understanding of that. Doesn't negate the long-term bullish. I'm incredibly bullish. It just means that we have to build up these technologies, and they take time.
When do you think we will all be flying around in these wonderful flying machines? And
you know, I think if you're in certain cities where the launches occur, I think you'll be able to fly some of them in 2024 and 2025 on a limited availability. And then we get out to 27, 28, 29, we're going to see a significant rollout, because you'll have multiple different OEMs that will have rolled out. There'll be the infrastructure that'll be started to build. And like any industry or regulatory body, we want to be careful. So it will be incremental. You know, if you look at how, and you're a student of Asia and China, I always take a look back. We were frustrated in the early days of, let's say, back at, I date myself, right? So let's talk about 2007, 2008, 2009, where you watched the CAAC in China be very thoughtful about how many business jets they allowed in a year. And everyone was like, hurry up. But they were thoughtful and methodical. They were building out airports. They were letting a certain number in a year. They were training pilots. They were training maintenance people. And that was an easy industry to do. Not an easy one, but there was a model to follow. We're going to need to do the same thing in advanced air mobility. So everyone just has to be patient. And as a consumer and a long-term enthusiast, we want them to be thoughtful, methodical, and patient and careful, because safety is the number one, the paramount issue for every OEM and every user of the industry.
It's interesting you should mention patience, because as an aviation and technology enthusiast, in my mind at least, this sort of middle step where we're having people piloting these aircraft has almost been skipped in my mind, and we've sort of jumped ahead, and all we hear about are all these VTOLs, and all people really care about is the whole automated process that they're going to go through. That sort of final step, if you like, taking the middle step of having people pilot these aircraft. When do you think that we'll be able to move on to that sort of automation phase? And what do you think has to happen for that to happen?
We've got a lot of companies working on it, and they have reasonable timelines. You've got WISC and Gary Gessler over there, who's doing a great job, and he's being methodical and knows the process. And then you've got groups like X-Wing, you've got Reliable Robotics, you've got Merlin, Skyrise, who are all taking different approaches to autonomy and aircraft autonomy, and those will be step by step. And the FAA is working on that. You know, one of the things that I think would I wouldn't say speed it up, but it would be good to have more resources within the FAA and EASA and other organizations. I think the way EASA is staffed up, is set up, they can staff up a little faster than the FAA can. But we need to make sure that they have the bandwidth to process all of these and make it happen, because there's so many different technologies being thrown at the FAA and they are doing their best. But you've got, I just named six different companies that are well-funded, that are out there, that are pretty far along in their processes. So we need to have the bandwidth, the throughput to be able to expand that. So I would expect those companies, they're already doing experimental flights today. Their technology is relatively far along. So what they need to do is get the data and the flights to the FAA and then work with them on that process of autonomy, because it will happen. We are capable of doing it.
And you mentioned they're all taking slightly different approaches to solving this problem. Do you think a unified approach would help, especially in the early days with the early certification that needs to take place?
It's a great question. I view it as two worlds. So, you know, in the cars, you always had, and it was like, it was a gradual approach and they had a mechanism. What we see in aerospace is I go top down and bottom up, right? So one is pilot assist, which we've always had. We watched Garmin do an amazing job of that. Pull tasks away, automate tasks, really autopilot came in only in the sense of emergency. But that's essentially what some of the approach some are taking. Like a Merlin is taking, okay, let me automate tasks. Let me actually work with, let's say, a Gulfstream or a fighter pilot or a C-130 and figure out how that aircraft can be piloted by one individual, making it more efficient by removing tasks or automating tasks within the cockpit. That's something the entire industry is very comfortable with and is a natural progression. There are other companies, and they're doing it more in caravans. X-Wing and Reliable are two great approaches. And they are taking, we're going to automate the entire thing. We're going to keep a human in, kind of the Uber approach, or I should say Waymo approach. We're going to have a human in the cockpit, but we're going to automate everything, and it's going to be run remotely. So you'll have a remotely piloted vehicle. And where we think this will first be tested is in the cargo side. So both groups are working with UPS and FedEx, and they're working with remote airports. And also the logistics is actually, funny enough, autopilot in the air, as any pilot knows, is a relatively easy process. So that a lot of that has already been done. But actually, it's the ground part, which is a little bit more difficult. How do you communicate with the tower? How do you move the aircraft on the ground? So there's a lot of logistics associated. And then, of course, you get the detect and avoid and the sense and avoid technology, which is also different. You've got Iris coming out with some technologies. Honeywell is actively looking at the radar side and integrating other things. So it's all of those new innovations that need to be integrated put in place. And then you have a concept of operation, which has to be approved. And we're watching that in real time today. So these companies are flying these aircraft, certainly on the cargo side. They're doing the takeoff and landing and relocating and all that difficult on the ground. And we should, now we've got to in the process and get the data out there so we can get it approved.
Absolutely. And so I just have one last question. And actually, we're sort of slightly out of sequence because I meant to ask you this sort of earlier on. I think as if I was an outsider looking at the sort of UAM, AAM industry, I think that it's just sort of suddenly sprung out from nowhere. Come literally out of nowhere over the past couple of years. But I was just wondering, because stuff's obviously been going on, and research and funding for research has been going on in the background for many, many years, no doubt. But I was just wondering if you had something in your mind that was like a turning point where you or anybody else in the industry suddenly thought, okay, this is going to start getting serious now. Maybe we should start paying some attention to it.
That's a great question. And Elude, I would say a couple things. We've had General Atomics doing remotely piloted drones for decades, right? This is not a new technology. This is just a new application of the technology. And what you've got is small, innovative companies, you know, taking that autonomy technology, that remotely piloted aircraft, and applying it to the commercial industry. So the DoD, and it's just been highly... We always like to use the word exquisite in the satellite space, but you could almost say that about the fighter pilots that Boeing has been making for a long time, or the General Dynamic drones. So the technology has been there. And if you look at Joby, they've been around for 10 plus years. This is not a new company that is starting. Same with Volocopter. They've been around for 10 plus years. So while people only started hearing about them a year and a half ago, and there were some others that crept up, a lot of these corporations have been around and funded. For me, when I was at ExoJet or Hawker Beechcraft, I always looked around the industry and tried to take ideas from other parts. So I would spend a lot of time in the commercial industry and say, oh, they're doing something interesting. Let's apply it to the business jet sector. It makes sense for this part to be applied here. You know, if you look at the progress that Waymo was making, another company that has been around for 10 or 12 years, and for me, that was the turning point. As you watch the technology occur with cars and how much more difficult cars and how many things cars have to deal with on the ground and the software programming of that is exponentially harder than flying an aircraft through the air. That for me was the turning point, that these technologies can be applied to the business, to the general aviation sector. They do exist. And the last part was electrification. You know, once we really saw battery technology and the capability, and it's funny, 3 or 4 years ago, so as we started investing in the sector, let's say 2018, everyone was poo-pooing hydrogen, right? At that point, we were like, oh, hydrogen won't work. It'll never happen. And now look at our world. Now we're like, no, it's likely electrification on the smaller end and hydrogen on the larger end. And we've got a great innovation going on in containers and propulsion. And, you know, I always talk about FedEx, how that works. But once an individual starts seeing all these really cool innovations that are happening, you can see the path being built. And as I talk about patience and incremental, but you can see the path being built, which is showing us that we will get there. Will it take time? Yes. We all talked about in 2000, you know, having a processing power of a computer in our hand. And now we do. And we take it for granted. I think our industry will evolve in the same sort of way.
Perfect. Kirsten, I'd love to keep talking, but I know you're a very busy lady and you've got some meetings to go to. So in that case, I think we'll end it there. So Kirsten, thank you so much for talking to us. We really appreciate it.
Elude, I always love catching up with you. You've been a huge supporter and advocate for the entire industry for many years, and thank you for all that you do.
You're too kind as always, Kirsten. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on Asian Skycast. Make sure to visit our website, Asian Sky Media, where you can subscribe to the show on your phone or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show.